The last piece on the sugya of Eldar Umeda, here on Daf Yud Zayin of an Aleph, we left for today. And that's the sugya called Omar Mar. So let's see if we could find Omar Mar here on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. And what the Gemara is going to try to figure out here is whether or not Eldad Umeidad had a one-up it on the other Zakenim in terms of Nevuah. Because the other Zakenim had only a temporary Nevuah, whereas Eldad Umeidad had a permanent Nevuah. So let's see if we can find Omar Mar. I have my finger on the place.
It's about six lines up from the wide.
Oh, from the wide lines, you go up six lines. Omar Mar, we saw in the Braisa, Kol HaNeviim Kulam Nisnabu Uposku. All the Neviim had a temporary Nevuah, but Haim, these two, Eldad Umeidad Nisnabu Velo Posku. They continue to have Nevuah. In fact, yesterday we mentioned one approach that there were three different Nevuahs that they had. One Nevuah was that of Eldad, and that was about Moshe Beis. There was another Nevuah of Medad, and that was about the Slav. And then there was a third Nevuah where they both coincided, and that was the Nevuah about Gog Magog. So they were continuing with their Nevuah, and that's what we saw in the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Minolan de Pasku. How do you know that the other Zkenim, the other 68, had a temporary Nevuah which terminated after they left the environs of the old Moed? Ilema, if you're going to suggest me that Siva Isnabu Velo Yasafu, and Velo Yasafu means that he didn't continue, so that what the Gemara is now suggesting is that there are two ways of understanding the words Velo Yasafu. Velo Yasafu could either mean it didn't stop and it kept going, or Velo Yasafu means it didn't continue and it stopped. I mean, the two polar opposites. So now the Gemara is suggesting that we take the interpretation that Velo Yasafu means it terminated. Elameyat, if that be the case, what do we do with the other Velo Yasaf, which is at Mamed Har Sinai? And there it says, Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf. And yesterday we had a whole discussion in the name of the Torah Chaim, how we can still tap into that Kol of Har Sinai even today, because Lo Yasaf means that Lo Pasak, it did not terminate, it was continuous. It's Hachinami, Dula Osifu. Are you going to tell me that the Kol of the Shechina at the Mamed Har Sinai, Lo Yasaf means it did not continue, there was no Tosefes, and it terminated? That's not something we can accept. The Kol Shechina at the time of Matan Torah is going to continue endlessly. Ela, but rather, the Lo Pasaku. So therefore, we're going to have to assume that Lo Yasaf means it didn't stop, it didn't terminate, it continued. So then we should assume that with regard to this Canaan, when it says Vayisnabu V'lo Yasafu, it means that their Nevuah continued. How then does the Braisa assume that the Nevuah of these Canaan, other than Eldad Umeidad, terminated? Ella, but the Gemara says no. We're going to learn, we're going to derive the conclusion that the termination of their Nevuah from a diuk, from a different careful, meticulous reading of the Torah. And that is the fact that the Torah uses two different languages with regard to Nevuah, one for the Zkenim and the other for Eldad Umeidad, one in the past tense and one in the future tense. Elohacha, but rather if we look about the Zkenim, it says Vayisnabu in the past tense. Hasam, but when it comes to Eldad Umeidad Ksiv, again, these two psukim are one next to the other, one is, they're both in Perek Yud Aleph, but Midbar, one is in Pasuk Chav Hey, the other is in Pasuk Chav Zayin. And when we get to Pasuk Chav Zayin, regard to Eldad Umeidad, it says, Misnabim, they are prophesizing. And why did the Torah use that term, which is different than Vayisnabu in the past tense, to imply Adayin Misnabim Beholchim, the contrast between the other Zekanim and these two is that whereas the other Zekanim Vayisnabu in the past tense, in the case of Eldad and Medad, they continue to be Misnabi, and therefore the Torah uses the term Misnabim in the present tense. So now the question is, what do we do with the fact that it says in the case of Vayisnabu, which was the earlier pasuk referring to this Kanim, it says V'lo Yasaf, right? V'lo Yasafu, which we prove from Maimed Har Sinai that V'lo Yasafu means Lo Pasak, and it continues. So in the Ein Yaakov, which you know is an anthology of commentaries on the Haggadah, he says that the words V'lo Yasafu lend themselves to two different interpretations. They're both valid. So that you could have the same word in two different contexts within Tanakh, and they mean exact opposites. That's pretty amazing. So in the context of Matan Torah, when we're talking about the call of the Shekhinah, and it says Lo Yasaf, that means that it continued. But in the context of Vayisnabu, in the past tense, which means that the Zekanim had Nevuah that terminated, then Lo Yasafu means there was no Tosefes. It did not continue, but rather it was discontinued. Now we get to Yoshua. This is where we stopped yesterday. Bishleim Laman Diomer Moshe Meis. If the content of the test of the prophecy of Eldad Umedad was about the death of Moshe, Hainu Dixiv, I understand why Yoshua came running back to Moshe with a complaint. Adoni Moshe Klaim. Klaim might mean to destroy them, or it might mean to terminate their nevuah. And we understand very well that Yoshua is up in arms with the fact that these two youngsters, these whippersnappers, are telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu, our great leader, is going to die, and he won't lead us into Eretz Yisrael. But Elamani Yomar Anachtarti. But if on the other hand they were prophesizing about the Slava or Gog Magog, why is Yoshua so up in arms? Adoni Moshe claim. So the Gemara says that it was improper. Even if the content of the Nevuah was totally neutral, there was nothing negative about it, it was still improper. Why was it improper? That's called Lav Orech Ara. Dahavi Le Ketalmid Amora Halochim Fnei Rabba. Who are you to prophesy in the presence of your Rebbe, of Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the greatest personification of a Navi that we ever had and we ever will have? So that Yoshua was upset with the very, not the content of the Nevuah, but the very act of Nevuah. Why are they prophesizing? Now, we asked the question 2 days ago, if you remember, that we have a sugya later on in Sanhedrin, which is called Novi Yaakovich Nevuah Sachayv Miso. What complaint could Yoshua register against Eldad Umedad? If they receive this Nevuah, they have to transmit this Nevuah. So the answer is that not always... It's not true that in every single case a Nevuah has to be transmitted. And there are exceptions to the rule. And the exception to the rule is called Nechtema HaGzera. Then there are two stages in every divine decree. There's the original decision on the part of the Almighty to issue a decree, and then there's the actual Chatima, when the decree is documented and signed and sealed. Nevuah has to be transmitted before the Chatima HaSagzera, because then there's a possibility of tshuva. There's always a possibility for a person to change even a Nevuah Ra'a, even a foretelling of foreboding of evil, because he can do tshuva up until a certain point. God allows man to do tshuva until this Chatima, until the decree is signed and sealed. In this case, since there was already a Chatima on this Gzar Din, therefore, the law that requires a Navi to transmit his Nevuah doesn't apply. That requirement, that obligation on the part of a Navi to transmit his Nevuah is based on the goal. And what is the goal that this Nevuah is meant to achieve? To get people to do tshuva. Well, that can only be achieved if he transmits the tshuva, the Nevuah. If he doesn't transmit the Nevuah, then obviously no one's going to be uplifted and inspired, aroused to do tshuva. So that's called Chayav Misa, it's Novi Yaakovich Es Nevuasa. But in a case where the Rov is Chasima, and the Din is signed and sealed, you have no obligation to transmit that Nevuah, because it's not going to serve any purpose, there's no possibility of tshuva. In this case, since the chasim of Moshe's death was already given, it was already signed and sealed, there was no obligation of Nove Yaakovish's Nuvasa to transmit that Nevuah. And now it becomes improper for them to transmit the Nevuah. So that's in the case of Moshe Mace. In the cases of Slav and Gog Magog, there Yoshua's objection was a totally different objection. And that was that they shouldn't have been publicizing the Nevuah in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is now exclusively the Navi who's in charge of Nevuah. So let me read to you the language of the poskim here. They write the following. Haya haminag b'Yisrael, it was accepted custom in Israel, shelo yisnabe adam ba'asido, so a person would not prophesize the future, b'mokom in the presence or in the close proximity of a Navi gadol mimenu, of a Navi who's greater than him. Ela shaholchim achrav, kitalmidim, they follow in the footsteps of the great Navi, the Navi Gadol, kitalmidim, like students, like disciples, v'heim b'nei ha-Navim, they're called in Tanakh the children of the Navim, meaning the disciples of the Navi. The Amar Rabbi Levi, b'mesechta erev in daf samach gimel, Yoshua nenash. Yoshua also overstepped his bounds. Why? Because he told Moshe, kla'em. And that itself is a horas din. And ein hatalmid rashoy lahoros bifnei raholos halach bifnei rabo. So it's really interesting here that, you know, it's kind of like, if you're familiar with the phrase called apostle b'mumo apostle, you know, it's the Yoshua is attacking, he's very antagonistic towards the Nevi'im who prophesies in the presence of the Gadol of the Navi Gadol. And he himself, Yoshua, overstepped his bounds by adding Kla'em, by telling Moshe Rabbeinu that they deserve to be, if not to be destroyed, at least that their Nevuah should be terminated. So there's kind of like a Mida Kenegid Mida over here, because Yoshua eventually is going to forget many, many halachas. He's going to have a lot of sfeikos in his halacha, because he overstepped his bounds. The Gemara says, "Bishlem l'man diomar hanach tarti hainu d'ksiv mi yiten." We understand that Moshe Rabbeinu was very satisfied when you have two Nevi'im who are misnabi, even though they shouldn't have done it because it's Talmud Amor Allah they rabba, but he was mochel on his kavod because Moshe Rabbeinu is the personification of Anova, the Mida of humility. So we can understand that Moshe Rabbeinu made this very joyous statement: "I would only wish that all of the people of Israel would be Nevi'im." Elamadi Omer Moshe Meis, if the substance of their Nevuah of Eldar who made them was that Moshe would die, is Menach Havi Nichole? Could he have been satisfied and joyous with the fact that he's going to die? So the Gemara gives a strange answer. Lo Simua Kame. Now, if you translate this literally, you might come to a mistaken conclusion. Lo Simua Kame literally means that there was no completion of their Nevuah. What does that mean? Does that mean that Eldad Umeda didn't tell the whole story? I mean, we've always assumed from beginning to end that they gave a full prophecy, and Yoshua heard this prophecy, he got very upset about it. So there's going to be a reinterpretation here of this Gemara. That's the Yad Ramah. I always tell you he's the kingpin of the Rishonim on Masechta Sanhedrin. And the Yad Ramah writes that Lo Simua Kameh means not that they, Eldad Umeda, didn't complete the Nevuah, but Yoshua did not complete his recording of the Nevuah, or shall I say his transmission of the Nevuah to Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't tell the whole story. What does that mean? So there's one pshat, which is the Yad Ramah's pshat, and another pshat is the Aruch Lanei. The Yad Ramah says, Lo Simua Kameh means that Yoshua just told Moshe Rabbeinu that these people are being misnabe, which is not proper because the midig is that a Talmud, a Bnei HaNevi'im, is not meant to prophesize publicly in the presence of an Avi Gadol, of his Rebbe. But he didn't share with with Moshe Rabbeinu the content of the Nevuah. The Aruch HaNer is not happy with that. He doesn't believe for one moment that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Yoshua, you know, completely withheld the Nevuah of Eldar Meida, because if that be the case, then Moshe Rabbeinu should have interrogated Yoshua and said, what do you mean they're prophesizing? Do you know what they're prophesizing? He should have, you know, squeezed him for a little bit more information. On the other hand, if the Nevuah of Eldad Meidu was transmitted to Moshe Rabbeinu in its entirety, then the Gemara's question is, how could Moshe Rabbeinu be Menach Nayach? How could he be satisfied to find out that he's going to die and Yoshua is going to take the people into Eretz Yisrael? So the Aruch HaNer, who lived about 150 years ago, well, you know what? Time is flying. It's almost 200 years ago now, because in 1820, he was expelled for anti-Semitic reasons from the university in Germany. You know, he was the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch when they believed in Torah and Derech Eretz. You know, they studied philosophy. So the Aruch HaNer studied philosophy in Germany. He had to leave because of anti-Semitism. He was a genius of geniuses. So he says the following, that lo simuha, if you read the Gemara carefully, lo simuha, the word l'sayim, it means to begin without an ending. Like, right, asiyim, whenever we finish a mesechta, we complete a mesechta, we say asiyim. Lo sime means he started but he didn't finish. So what did Yoshua start and what did he leave out? He started with the first part of the Nevuah, Moshe Meis. But he didn't add the Yoshua Machnisa L'Eretz Yisrael. Says the Aruch HaNer, if that's what the Gemara means, then why was Moshe Rabbeinu named Menach Nayach? Who would be satisfied to hear that he's going to die? So he says the following, a big chiddush of the Aruch HaNer. He says the following, that for Moshe Rabbeinu to find out that he's going to die is not depressing. Even though Eliyahu HaNavi didn't die, if you remember, he went up to Shamayim alive. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what, I don't have to be on that level of an Eliyahu HaNavi, I can die. As long as I enter into Eretz Yisrael. Let me enter into Eretz Yisrael. There I'm going to fulfill all the mitzvahs that are unique to Eretz Yisrael, a mitzvah tluyus baretz, and then I'll die. That would be fine. And Moshe Rabbeinu would give a smile for that. All that Moshe Rabbeinu cared about was the opportunity to enter into the land. Had Yoshua been Messiah and added Yoshua Machnisam Leretz Yisrael, then the Gemara has a problem. Because in such a case, Moshe Rabbeinu would understand that if Yoshua is going to enter in, he's going to lead them into the land, that he would die before he enters into the land. Because we have a principle called Ein Malchus Nogas Bechavrta, that there couldn't be two people who are both leading the people simultaneously. You can't have two malachim. That was the whole story that we'll have in Rashi in this week's parish about the moon. You remember that the moon said, "Ain sheik sovish tamsh v'keser efetz hakosh bochum is v'may." That's what we call "Honey, I shrunk the moon," right? And this would be a very difficult nevuah for Moshe Rabbeinu. And after the Gemara says, "Lo simua l'nevuah zu." Now he quotes the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai, you may know, wrote a magnum opus on Agadata. Agadata is very hard. And this is called the Ben Yehoyada, the same author as the Ben Ish Chai. And he writes the following. Chelka rishon shel nevuas Moshe, Moshe meis, eino kosher kol kach. Moshe could live, pardon the pun, with the prophecy that he'll die. Moshe in his mind thought that his death was not yet a gzera decree that was signed and sealed, v'yesh tikva, and he had hope that he could still undermine and nullify this gzera and enter into the land. But the second half of the nevuah, which Yoshua again withheld, namely that Yoshua machnisim la'aretz, that would certainly indicate that nechtema hagzera. Why? Because we have a principle called that gzeira tova eino chozeres li'olam, that when God gives a gzeira tova, then he'll never rescind it. It's irretractable. And for Yoshua, this would be a gzeira tova, that he, Yoshua, be the leader to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. It means that Yoshua would conquer the land, and he would sanctify the land. That was a great foreboding, a great nevuah prophecy for Yoshua. If that be the case, then Moshe would understand that nech tovah gzeira, because a nevuah tova is eino chozeres li'olam. Now he quotes a sefer called the Chamra V'Chai. I'm not familiar. I think it's Ben Venisti. I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. And he says the following. The Gemara says, Menach Avinayach Le? Could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu's response was Mi Yitain? That I'm very satisfied that they, meaning Eldar and Medar, are prophesizing. And he says the following. I don't understand the Gemara's kasha. How could Moshe Rabbeinu be satisfied with such a nevuah? Hare Eldar Umeidu lo omer kemi daitam el benevuah ben shamayim. Eldar Umeidu were not making up a story. They had received this prophecy from the heavens. Uma hoyelo le Moshe lasos. Why does the Gemara think that Moshe Rabbeinu should have had a different response? How could Moshe Rabbeinu have passively accepted this nevuah? Nevuah is min shamayim. Well, what was his choice? He's gonna reject this nevuah? How can he reject the true nevuah? It comes from the VAMS. So he says the following. The Gemara's kasha here is not how was Moshe Rabbeinu able to accept this nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu would certainly accept any nevuah. But rather, the Gemara's kasha was on Yoshua. If I hold, like the other two opinions, that the nevuah of Eldar Medi was about the Slava Gog Magog, we could appreciate why Yoshua would say to Moshe, Kla'em, terminate the nevuah, because this was improper. But if you hold that the nevuah, like the first opinion, was that Moshe makes Yoshua Machnisam, Hare Menach Avinayach Le, Yoshua should have been very happy with this nevuah, to know that he was chosen to lead the people into the land. Is Madua Kasalim? That's the Gemara's kasha. Why was Yoshua so upset with these two Nevi'im and he told Moshe to terminate them, when he should have been in a state of absolute joy and elation because he would be the one to lead the people? Al kach mitaretzes haGemara lo simua kamei de Yoshua. Meaning Yoshua really didn't know exactly what they were testifying. And therefore, if he didn't really appreciate the substance of the testimony, we can begin to understand why he was upset. Because they had no right to testify in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. And finally, the Gemara ends by interpreting Kla'em in a different way. They would take upon themselves the leadership of Klal Yisrael, and so forth and so on. Okay, Rabosai, now at this point, we start the new suit. So I'm going to ask you to turn back to the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. We're up to Uminayin Liktana Shehi Shel Esrim Vishlosha. So this is five, let's see, one, two, three, six lines up before the end of the Mishnah. I mean, well, it's not before the end of the Mishnah, but before the end of the Amud. The Mishnah asks itself the following question. We've established that there's a lower Sanhedrin, which is made up of 23 judges. How do we arrive at this number 23? And the Mishnah answers the following. Shenemar, in the Parsha of Rotzeach, which is towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar, it says, V'shaftu ha'ida v'itzilu ha'ida. These are two psukim that are contiguous. In the first one it says, V'shaftu ha'ida. And the Eidah here is not just an assembly or a community of Jews, but rather it's the Eidah HaShofetes. It's the community that gives judgment, meaning the judges and the court. And then it says, V'itzilu HaEidah. Now that's a little bit odd. It's telling the judges to save the accused. What do you mean? We're here in a court in order to determine truth. So what are you telling me, that we should stack the cards in favor of Itzilu Aida? So the Mishnah understands that the subject of this pasuk is a machlokes amongst the Dayanim. There's a dissenting view, and there is a majority view. Now, let's say I had 21 judges on the court. That's not the case, right? We need 23. But let's say you had a court made up of 21 judges. Then, if 11 would decide to condemn the accused, and 10 would vote in favor of acquittal, we would have to condemn the accused. Why? Because we have a majority. So the Torah says, V'itzilu ha'eda. V'itzilu ha'eda means we have to make an extra push to try to save the nidon. And how do we do so? What we're going to do is, we're going to have to add an extra judge, but again, that's going to be a problem, because if we jack up the number from 21 to 22, we're ending up with what?
Equals.
Right, and that's called a Beis and Shokel. So we're going to add two extra judges. And this is what the Mishnah is going to try to derive. Let's see how the Mishnah does so. The word Eda, which appears twice in two continuous psukim, refers to an Eda Shofetis. And the Gemara, the Mishnah, assumes that Eda equals what number?
Ten.
And we're going to see in the next line in the Mishnah how we derive that conclusion. So there's an Eda Shofetis. Then the Pasuk says, V'itzilu Eda, again a repetition of Eda, that's called an Eda Matzelis. So the Eda Shofetis would be 10 judges that vote in favor of condemning the accused. The Eda Matzelis is another 10 judges that vote in favor of acquittal, of vindicating the accused. Harei Kan Esrim. So we take one Eda, which is the Eda HaShofetes, and we have another Eda, the Eda Matzelis. We add 10 plus 10, we end up 20. Again, we're going to soon see that we can't have an even number of Beis and Shokel, so we're going to have to add at least one, and then we're going to have to jack it up from 1 to 3. But first, we take an interlude. And the Gemara wedges in another issue here, and that is, Minayin le'eda shishal asara. We've been assuming that the word Eda is 10. How do we know that Eda equals 10? So this is really interesting. And this mission appears in two places in Shas. It appears in Masechta Megillah, with regard to what's called Ein Davar Shebekedusha, Pachos Me'asara, which is really interesting. We're going to derive from the Raglim, 10 of which were the Eda Rasha, Eda Ra, which the Torah talks about, the number 10 for Davar Shebekedusha. It's a little bit paradoxical. Uminayli Eda Sheasara, Shenemar, it says with regard to the Meraglim, there were 12 Meraglim, it says, Admosai La Eda Ra Azos, which means that there's the Eda, which is called the Eda Ra. Yatsa Yoshua Kalev, they're not included in Eda Ra. So we take the number 12, we subtract 2, and we're left with 10.
But there's a second Gezeira Shofar, isn't there, for the Dovah Shavu Kedusha, because of the word Besok.
Right, Tov.
Besok B'nei Israel.
But why do we need that? I don't remember the Gemara. If you have a Gemara Megillah, I could look that up. But I'd rather stick to Sanhedrin.
Well, that brings it to the Dovah Shavu Kedusha, because that's V'nikdashti Besok B'nei Israel.
Oh, so I see. Right. But again, it still is very odd.
Of course,
because,
starting with the Meraglim. Yeah, I understand.
Uminayin lahavi od shlosha. So let's say that we add one extra judge. The Torah has told us Eda times two, but it's shakul, so we need a 21st judge. How do you know that we should jack it up to 23 and add 3 members to the court? So he says the following. Mimashma shenemar. From the fact that the Torah commands us with regard to Dinei Nefashos, that the Beis Din for Dinei Nefashos lo tia achrei rabim liros, which means al telech achrei rov hadayonim lechayves hanidon misa, the Torah is telling us that even though there's a rov, that's not sufficient to paskin, to establish that the person should be condemned to death. Shomea andi, what I understand from this is sheye'eye imoem litova, that Hashem says that there should be a way of finding a schus for the nidon, for the person who's on trial, find some sort of justification or some way of alleviating his condemnation, his guilt, so that the Torah is saying, don't rely on Rov. And yet, what does that mean, don't rely on Rov? In Kelom and Emrachri Rabim Lahatos, although in that context, it says, Lotia Achri Rabim Leroz, but yet the Torah itself tells us, in the same Pasuk, Achri Rabim Lahatos, that we should determine the law based on Rov. So how do we reconcile these two psukim? On the one hand, the Torah says, don't rely on Rov, and the Torah says, yet, you should rely on Rov. So the Mishnah answers that what it says, Lo tiach re'rab and l'ros, at the beginning of this pasuk, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't rely on Rov at all, and Rov is completely irrelevant, but rather, Lo ka ha'tayoscha l'tova ha'tayoscha l'ra. That there's a difference between tipping the scale l'ra, which is indicated in the first pasuk l'ros, as opposed to the Rov that tips the scale l'tova, in order to acquit the accused. That's called Hatayasa Litova. And what's going to be the difference between the two? Hatayasa Litova is Alpi Echad. All you need is one judge to tip the scale. So if you have an even number, then one judge casts his lot with the Tova, meaning to acquit the accused. That's Hatayosra Litovan, all you need is Achirav Lahatos. One Rov will tip the scale Lahatos. But Hatayosra Litovan is different. Al Pishnayim. You must have a majority of not one Lechova Litovan, but rather of two. So let's make the calculation. If we have 21 judges on the court, that's Eda plus Eda and one to break the tie, then if you have 11 judges that are lirah, they condemn the accused, then you only have a majority of one. And the Torah is saying, lo siya achrei rabim liros, that hatayoscha lirah requires shnayim. So how are we going to do it? So let's add a 22nd judge. So if we have 22nd, you can have 12 against 10. But that's a problem because then it's an even number. So we have no choice in order to guarantee that there might be a rov of two extra dayanim in favor of ra'ah lechova, and at the same time kevachain bezin shakel, we can't have an even number. Mosifin aleim od echad, which means that we have to go beyond the number of 22. 22 alone would guarantee the possibility of two extra judges above the eda to break the tie by two and condemn the accused to death. But we're stuck with the Bezin Shakul, is therefore Mosif Aleim Od Echad, another judge, not just two, but three, Arekan Esrim Ushlosha. Now what this means, and now we go back to our Gemara here on the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, is that we must guarantee the possibility in the Bezdin that there'll be two judges that'll break the tie Lira up. And that's called Hatayoscha L'ra'ah.
That makes sense, because otherwise, in the end, it's just one person's opinion, because the others are all equal, so you could discount them. And you've got one person making the judgment. Right. Or at least here you've got two, three. Yeah.
So the Gemara now quotes our Mishnah, Minayin Lahavi Od Shlosha. How do we know that we have to add to the Eda of 20 another three? And the answer was that we need a Hatayah L'Ral Pishnayim, we can't have a Bezin Shakul, and therefore we have to add three. So the Gemara asks the following question. If you're adding an extra judge, that's number 23, in order that the Bezin should not be Shakul, then you're not going to guarantee that there'll be a majority of two L'Ra'ah. Why? Sof. L'Ra'ah Pishnayim Lo Mishkachas Leh. Why? Why don't you have a possibility of an extra two lira'ah to tip the scale lechova? Because iachadasar mezakin ushneimasar mechayver. What are you going to have now is the same issue. Let's take the number 23 and divide it into 11 and 12, right? 11 plus 12 equals 23. So we have now a majority of one.
Doesn't work.
Is akati chad, who you only have a hatoya l'ra based on one diet. V'i asara mezakim u'shlosha asara mechayvin. Well, you may have a different, but again, we always have to have an eda of mezakim, correct? Because it says v'itzilu ha'eda. So an eda is a minimum of 10. So we have 10 who are saying mezakim, but now there are 23 judges. So we have another 3 judges beyond the second eda hashofetes l'chova, and we have a vote of 13 to 10. So the Gemara says, Tlosahava, right? The Torah is imagining a situation where the Hatoya L'ra is going to be Al Pishnayim. Well, no matter how you juggle the elements in the equation here in a Bezdin of 23, you'll never have a situation where there's a Hatoya L'ra Al Pishnayim. Why? Because if it's 12 against 11, you don't have Hatoya L'ra Al Pishnayim. And if you're going to have 10 against 13, then you have Hatoya L'ra Al Pi Shlosha. When does it fall in such a way that you're going to have a Hatoya L'ra Al Pi Shnayim? Omer Rabbi Avo, Iyatamotzi Ela Bimosifin. The only possibility is in a case where we have to add extra judges. So again, our goal is to come up with a calculation of Hatoya L'ra Al Pi Shnayim. So let's say, for example, we have 11 judges on the court, litova. That's called lizchus hadnidon. Okay, that's 11. Now we have another 11 judges who say l'ra that he's chayv. So we have 11 lizchus and 11 l'ra. So far we're at the number 22. The 23rd judge, in order to break the tie, says any odea. I'm confused. I cannot come to any conclusion. So in such a case, and we've had the exposure to this in the past, we go through what's called mosifin. Mosifin means that we're going to have to replace this dayan, and we're going to have to add 2 judges. Okay, now what do we have over here? We have now 11 against 11, and the 23rd judge says any odea. And we have to add now 2 judges, right, to break the tie, lira'ah. Now, since one judge of the original 23 says any odea, he's not counted. He's commander lesser dummy. It's as if he's not there. So if you're going to add 2 judges now, what you're going to have is
24.
Just 1 second. Nimtza shem osa mashnayim yechayvu es hanidon. You achadas are mezakin u'shlosha are mechayvin. Right. So now we have 24 judges on the court because we replaced one judge with 2 judges. So we jacked up the number from 23 to 24. So now let's break it down into 11 against 13. Correct. Because 11 plus 13 is how much? Is 24. So we now have a situation of Hatoya L'ra Al Pi Shnayim. V'divrei HaKol, and this is acceptable according to everyone.
How could it be? It's a Beis Din Shakul.
Just 1 second. It's a Beis Din Shakul.
But they say he's still counted at 25.
Correct. Okay. Correct. He is still part of the Beis Din, but he's not part of the Minyan. Do you follow? As far as the Amid of the Minyan in the vote, He's completely neutral because he says any odea.
So we're going to 25 on the base stem, a 24 vote.
Correct. So we now, if we take the 24 voters, we can have a situation where it falls to be 11 versus 13. Now, what does the Gemara mean by it says v'divrei akol? Okay, what does this mean v'divrei akol? So in order to understand that, we have to read one more line in the Gemara. And the Gemara says the following. B'Sanhedri Gedola Valiba Rabbi Yehuda D'Omar Shivim. In other words, if you're talking about a Beis Din of 23, which is the Sanhedrin Aktana, then you're talking about everybody. When I say everybody, I mean even Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in the case of a Beis Din of 23 judges, meaning the Sanhedrin Akhtana, you need an odd number of judges on the court, and that means that it's not enough to have 22, but you have to have 23. And if you have 23, and one of them says Eini Yodea, you're going to have to replace him with two, and that's going to jack up the number to 24 voters, and that could be broken down into 11 versus 13. Now, let's talk about Sanhedrin Agdolah. If you recall, the Mishnah records a machlokus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda about the makeup of a Sanhedrin Agdolah. We are very familiar with the sheet of the Chachamim, that's how we paskin, that the Sanhedrin Agdolah is made up of 71 judges, which means that we have an odd number of judges on the court. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. If you remember, he doesn't count Moshe Rabbeinu. So we're left with only 70 judges. So the Sanhedrin HaGdolah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is made up of how many judges? 70 judges. Now let's try to see how we break down the vote of the 70 judges. Let's say 36 versus 34. Let's say we need a majority of 2 in order to be Machayev. Correct? That we derive from Ra'ah. What was it called? Hachra'ah L'Ra'ah. So we have now 36 judges that condemn the accused. We have 34 judges that are mezake. We have now hatoya l'ra al pishnayim. And the very fact that there is a Beis Din Shakul made up of 70, which could have been 35 against 35, right? That doesn't bother Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is not irritated by the even number of judges on the high court. And if that be the case, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you have an even number of judges on the court, you could have Atoya L'Ra Al Pishnayim. That's clear. So we have 36 against 34. 36 is Atoya L'Ra. However, let's go according to the Chachamim. The Chachamim hold, and how many members of the court are there in the Sanhedrin HaGdolah?
71.
Now, how are you going to get a Hatoya L'Ra Al Pishnayim in the case of 71? Because 71 means it's going to be 35 against 35, and then the last judge, the 71st judge, is going to cast the deciding ballot, and he's going to be Mate. Let's say he decides that the accused is Chayav. That's called a Hatoya L'Ra, but it's Al Pi Echad.
So stuck again.
Correct. You're stuck again with the same problem. But the Gemara is objecting here because how could it be that the makeup of the court is such that it doesn't have Atoya L'Ra? What do I mean? That in the case of the Sanhedrin HaGdolah, it has Atoya L'Ra al pi Echa, but not Atoya L'Ra al pi Shnayim. In the case of Sanhedrin Akhtano, which has 23 judges, right? So we're going to assume that even if there's an even number on both sides, we have an extra 3 judges to break the tie. Correct? Because the even number on both sides is 10 and 10. So we're going to add 3 to break the tie, and 2 out of those 3 are Machayev, so we have Atoya L'Ra Pishnayim. But in the case of Sanhedrin HaGdolah, if we're going to have 2 even, equal forces, then you only have 1 judge to break the tie. So where's that Toya Pishnayim? So the Gemara answers that this can only work out according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds that how many members are there in the court? 70. If there are 70 members on the court, then we could divide the court into 36 versus 34. V'yomer Rabbi Avo. Now the Gemara talks about this idea of Mosifin. If somebody says any Yodea, B'Mosifin Osim Beis Din Shakul L'Chadchila. In other words, even though we have a principle that we don't have an even number on the court, the exception to that principle is Mosifin. Why? Because if we have Mosifim, in Ichalku Beinayim, if there'll be a division amongst the judges, then we could be Machri al Pi Rov. Why? Because one of the judges drops out. He says, Eni Odea, Mosifim. And now we're going to add two judges. So once we add two judges, then we have a Beis Din Shakur. A Beis Din Shakur, right?
70.
Well, why is it a Beis Din Shakur? Let's just figure 70, this out.
72.
The Gemara now is assuming that even the judge who says Eni Odea, who is the odd man out, right? He makes the number into an odd number. Nevertheless, he's still part of the court. Again, the Gemara is going to reject this, but right now the Gemara thinks he's part of the court. If he's part of the makeup of the Beis Din, then if you're going to replace him with two, then by definition you have an even number of judges on the court.
72 votes.
Because you had an odd number, now you add two, you can end up with an even number. No, just 1 second. Something went wrong. I'm sorry. Just 1 second. If you're going to tell me, says Rabbi Avo, that there's a din of Mosifim, see. So now what happens? We don't have a Beis Din. Our principle is that there's no Beis Din Shakul. Right? Because if there's a Beis Din Shakul, there's a possibility of an equal number on both sides, and therefore it would be impossible to set up a row. Oh. But if we have to add to the number of Dayanim, so let's say, for example, what did we say? We had a case of a Beis Din of 23 judges. And one of them, right, so let's say they were divided up 11 and 11, so that's 22. And the 23rd judge said Eni Odea. So we're going to add two more judges, correct? So let's just work this out. So we have now an odd number, correct? What do we have? We have 23 judges. So let's say if we have 11 against 11, and the last judge says Eni Odea, correct? So what are we going to do? We're going to add two judges. So if we add two judges to a Beis Din, we only have 24 judges, correct? That's an even number. Why do we have 24 judges? Let me explain. We started with 23 judges, correct? Now, one of them says Eni Odea. So we're left with 11 and 11. That's 22. Now we're saying that to replace a judge who says Eni Odea, we need two judges. Well, that's going to take us from 22 to 24.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. Says Rabbi Yavo, that's okay. Why? Because then you could break it up in such a way that the vote of 24 is 13 versus 11. Did I get that right?
Yep.
13 versus 11. And now we have a Hataya al Pishnai. So the Gemara says Pshita. What did Rabbi Yavo add to our knowledge? Because the Mishnah later on says on Daf Mem that if one Dayan says Eni Odea, we replace him with two Dayanim. No, if that be the case, then by definition we have a Beis Din Shakul, right? Because we started with an odd number. Right. One of them dropped out.
23 to 20.
Right? And we went down to an even number. And now we added two judges, so it's an even number. So again, we have an even number and it's a Beis Din Shakul. But that's the principle of Mosifim. Mao to say my might have thought hi de comer in yodea kimande isadami. Even though this judge says I don't know, but he's still part of the Beis Din, and we'll see exactly what that means that he's still part of the Beis Din. But in this Hava, I mean, I would have said that he's still part of the Beis Din. And if he's still part of the Beis Din, then we remain in an odd number. Why? Because if there are 23 judges, so we had 11 versus 11, and the 23rd judge says Eni Odea, he's still part of the Beis Din. We'll see what that means in just a second. And now if you add two judges, what you have is a Beis Din Notem, meaning an odd number of judges, because by adding 2 to 21, I'm sorry, by adding 2 to 23, you're ending up with 25. So if it's 25, it's an odd number.
Even though 24 are voting, you still have 25 in the Beis Din.
Correct. So it's not a Beis Din Shakul. So how could Rabbi Yaffo say that this is a Beis Din Shakul? Now let's understand the Havamina. The Havamina says that even the Dayan, the 23rd giant who says any Yodeh, is still part of the Beis Din. How does that express itself?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Is that the credibility of the vote, then why is it...
Just 1 second. Here's how it explains. The Amar Milsa Dish Milsa. Let's say, for example, although maybe he's not ready to come to any sort of final commitment, but Amar Milsa, he says something that could influence the Beis Din. Do you follow what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's like... a spectator in a certain sense, but he's more than just a spectator. It could be that a spectator, and we'll have to figure this out soon, is not allowed to intervene and interject with his opinion, with his perspective or his argument, his logic. But this judge, who was part of the original Beis Din, remains on the Beis Din. He has a special status, and that status as part of the Beis Din expresses itself in Amar Milsa. Amar Milsa means he could say what's on his mind. And he could have an influence on the other members of the court. And if that be the case, you're still maintaining his status as one of the members of the court, which means that you still have 23 judges, and you add 2 judges to replace him in the vote, and you're still left with an odd number of judges on the court, 25. Kamash Malon, this is what Rabbi Yaffo wants to teach us. No, it's not that this judge who says Eini Yodea, I can't come to any conclusion, I'm confused, I hear the evidence on both sides and I don't know which way to go. The Eini Yodea command the less of them, he says Rabbi Yaffo, the very moment he claims that he cannot determine or tip the scale on the evidence and the anti-evidence in both directions, at that point he's not part of the Beis Din.
Right.
The Omar Taima. And if he wants to explain a reasoning, is lo shamina, we're not going to give him a schut, a right to express his opinion because he's no longer part of the court. He's basically dropped out of the court. How do we know that that's Rabbi Yavo's teaching? The answer is because Rabbi Yavo considers Mosifin, when we add 2 to replace 1, as a Beis Din Shakul. How can it be a Beis Din Shakul? You went from 23 to 25. The answer is that you went from 22 to 24. Why did you go from 23 to 24? Because the one who says Eini Yodea is no longer part of the yeshiva's Beis Din. It's Kamisha Eino Yoshev the Beis Din Domin. And therefore we're not going to listen to him when he expresses his opinion. Therefore we're left with 22 judges. And now we're going to replace the 23rd judge who said Eini Yodea with 2 judges, jacking up the number from 22 to 24. And that's what Rabbi Yaffo meant when he said that it is a Beis Din Shakul. Omar Rav Kahana, Sanhedrin Sharoh Kulam Lechova. There's a unanimous decision to condemn the accused. What would you say in such a case? Let's take him out to the Beis Haskiwa. Let's put him to death immediately. Potrin also. He's vindicated. Let him go home to his family. Does that make any sense whatsoever? This is counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So the answer is, my timer came into Gemiri once the judges look to the left, to the right, and everybody agrees with them. Nobody even questions the decision. You know, the testimony is crystal clear. The man picked up a gun and he killed somebody. Is halona sadin lemevid beischusa? We have a problem here that they'll never look for a schus, and that's called halona sadin. Let me explain. We're going to derive from Sukkim that once Beis Din comes to a decision, they will not issue the Gemar Din until the very next day. They have to sleep on it, as we would say. Halonas HaDin. And the purpose of that requirement of Halonas HaDin is that the judges should try to think what possible mitigating circumstance, what factor that might acquit the accused might be worthy of giving consideration and second thought. Vahani, but these judges, sulo chazile, you will defeat the purpose, or shall we say it would be pointless to have halonas adin for the purpose of Lemeved Beis Leis Chusa to find his Chus, because they are absolutely so convinced. There is no dissenting opinion. Nobody even questions the decision. They will not, psychologically, they will not be capable, in all honesty, of looking for a schus, because all the Dayanim agree that this Nidon is Chayav. And therefore, you've undermined the whole purpose of Halonas Adin. And Halonas Adin is an absolute requirement.
Rabbi, don't we have a halacha that with a Gemar Din, you can't let the
right, so the Gemar Din,
you can't let
the Gemar Din and the Misa will take place tomorrow.
Oh, you can't say.
But what's going to happen tonight before we get to tomorrow? That's called Halonas Adin, and that's Lemeved Beis Chusa, so that the Dayanim will rethink the case and hopefully will come up with some sort of a schus, so that there never will be a Gemar Din. And our sugya assumes that if there's no way, no how, that the Dayanim Beis Din will see a schus on behalf of the Nidon, then there's no point of Halonas Adin, and Halonas Adin is a major prerequisite or condition in judgment to condemn someone to death if he's Potel Gamre. Now in the footnote here, he says that there's another shita. We've explained this Gemara according to all the shitas in the Rishonim except for one, and that's the Tosus HaRosh, who quotes Rabbeinu Meir. Kavanas HaGemara Potrin also Hainu Shehargin Oso Miyat, that when the Gemara says Potrin Oso, it means they put him to death immediately. A whole radically different understanding of this sugya. Rabbi Meir, one of the Rishonim, quoted Tosa Rosh, is of the opinion that there's no need for Halonas Adin. Why? Because nobody found the schus. And if everybody unanimously agreed that he's chayav, then put him to death immediately, and that itself clinches the Gemar Din. There's no need for Halonas Adin. The only reason we postponed the Gemar Din till tomorrow was for the purpose of Halonas Adin, that maybe overnight they'll find a schus. Here there's no possibility that they'll find the schus. We're absolutely convinced that they won't be able to have, so there's no Halonas Adin. If there's no Halonas Adin, then the Gemar Din should be immediate, and therefore the Misa should be immediate. Hargan Osomia. I only share this with you because I don't want you to walk out of here with the wrong impression. You know, the impression that we have, which is a very good impression. I'm not arguing. You know, certainly you see how compassionate the law is, that the Jewish law will paradoxically exempt a murderer because of the unanimous decision that he's guilty. That shows the compassion. But I don't want you to walk out of here assuming that is absolute truth. I mean, it may be truth, but not everybody agrees to that. And there is another shita that says that if it's unanimous, Adarava, instead of postponing the Gemar Din till tomorrow and putting him to death tomorrow, we're going to institute a Gemar Din today and put him to death immediately. So you should know about the existence of such a shita, which changes the entire perspective on this sugya.
Can I just ask a question?
I'll tell you what. Let me just read one more line so we can get to the end of the daf, and then we'll take questions. Is that all right? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Moshivin B'Sanhedrin Ela Balei Koma Balei Chachma Balei Mira Ubalei Zikna Ubalei Kshofen V'Yodim B'Shivim Lashon. So Rabbi Yochanan sets up five requirements in order to sit on a Sanhedrin. B'lin Edit tomorrow, we'll go through all these five one by one and try to understand them. So let me wish everyone a great Shabbos. And it's Parshas Bereishis, which means that we have to have a new energy force and a newest Orus and inspiration. And Mirtz Hashem, we're facing a great year. It should be a year of Torah for us here in Masechta Sanhedrin, Kei Yiran Tzon.
Amen.
And now I'll take questions.
So, with the opinion that we had, not the last one, the one before, where everybody says he's guilty, and so he actually gets acquitted, it goes back the other way. Now, as far as I understand it, the votes were public, They started with, I think, the youngest first voting, and it went round the room, and they ended up with the most senior, because then otherwise the younger ones would just copy what the more experienced ones.
I don't know, copy, but they would be inhibited to express their opinion.
Yeah. So
if they had a different
opinion. So
can I just trouble you, Steve, to open the door here? I'll tell you why, because I don't know if Rabbi Moyes wants me to teach a class here or not. Yeah, go ahead.
So if we get to the one before the end, and they've all said Chayav, the last guy, if he says Chayav, he goes off. But if he says he's innocent, he actually becomes Chayav. Because the last guy holds the whole trump card in his hand.
Right.
But his vote actually causes it to go the other way. If he says Chayav, the guy goes off. If he says he's innocent,
right,
he becomes Chayav because you've got the majority. And so does he vote according to his conscience, or does he vote according to what result is going to produce?
Right. So the Torah says Midvar Sheker Tirchu. And actually that principle was formulated in the context of Dayanim. I mean, there's even a shita of the Yireyim, I don't want to confuse you, that there's no Issur Sheker, it's only for Dayanim.
Right.
So certainly a Dayan has to say Chayav or Potur based on Emes, what he believes to be true.
But he's
not allowed to make calculations, right. Well, what's going to
but
be
the
implication?
He'll make it go the other way. He'll make it go the other way. So right. He should do that.
That's what he has to do.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you understand? He makes it go to the opposite.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever he says, he goes to the opposite.